हरे हे चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
So what story were we on? Nobody remembers.
The two brothers.
The brothers Grimm. Okay, and now why is this story being told about the two brothers?
This was for an example that those two brothers, even though they were so dear to each other, they killed themselves for the sake of a woman.
Yes. Is that what you're going to say? Yeah, so then that's the whole thing, because in the world you have possession. Possession comes from attachment, right? The symptom attachment. So then attachment means that you're not using the intelligence so clearly. Does that make sense? Right? Rupa Goswami explains that then when you have a relationship, then there's attraction. From attraction, then you have attachment, right? So attraction is in sambandha, right? So the intelligence is still there. But in attachment, that's prayojana. So now you've gone from attraction to attachment, from sambandha to prayojana. So what did you cross over to get there?
Abhideya.
So what is one of the symptoms of abhideya? Right? Action and? Or action with?
Knowledge,
right? Does that make sense? So in other words, attachment means that knowledge has been crossed over, means it's not being used. Does that make sense? It's important to understand these points. So, therefore, attachment means you're not using reasoning, right? You're attached to it just because you're attached to it. There's no specific logical reason, or there doesn't need to be. There may be one, but it doesn't have to be. Does that make sense? That's attachment. So then what he's trying to point out is that therefore this sense of possession or attachment that is there between male and female, that's the strongest there is. And it's to the point where even someone so close as this could kill each other over that attachment. Does that make sense? So you always have to be very, very careful. That's why in the Vedas then, this attachment is very much regulated so that you're situated properly in your duties, so that it, even though the attachment can increase, you know, however much it develops, but one does not go outside the realm of one's duty. Does that make sense? Right? Because the natural thing is within attachment also, that's the field of religiousness makes that that aspect strong. Does that make sense? Because attachment, your prayojana, means it has to be connected to sambandha to actually exist. Does that make sense? Attachment exists because it's connected to sambandha through desire, through attraction. Does that make sense? Right? You have Madan Mohan, which is attraction, that will develop into Gopinatha, prayojana, right? So from Prajumna you'll go to Aniruddha, right? So that means Aniruddha is based on Prajumna, right? Aniruddha is who? What's Aniruddha's relationship in the Dwarka Lila to Prajumna? Yes, he's a son, right? So that means from attraction comes attachment. So attachment's position is dependent upon being connected to attraction, which means sambandha. Does that make sense? So that's therefore, it's natural then, the attachment functions because of religious principles. Right? Does that make sense? That will be the strongest attachment. In other words, there'll be attachment if it's not based on religious principles, right? In other words, you can become attached to somebody who they themselves is not religious and not interested in religious principles. But you'll find that that attachment will be an inferior attachment. Because it's religious principles that are gained from the sambandha that makes the prayojana strong. Does that make sense? You see the logic there? Right? It's important. Otherwise, it's like, what do we care? We're free. We do whatever we want to do. You know, tell the morality police to beat it. And, you know, you understand? But the point is you can do that if you are committed to an inferior relationship that will break when something else more interesting comes along. Right? You understand? And anything that you're looking at, there's an attraction to, there's an excitement. And unless you understand what I'm talking about, you won't be able to tell the difference between excitement and actual need. Right? Does that make sense? Because in the beginning of a relationship, you have both excitement and need. Right? The excitement's more, the need's less, because the excitement means there's a possibility of it developing into need. Right? Does that make sense? But with time, once you get to know the other person, excitement goes down because the possibilities are known. It's not something new. And when that goes down, if you can't tell the difference between excitement and need, that relationship will become boring, and a good chance, if you're not religious, it will break. Right? Right now we're talking very straight. If you want to know why relationships break, you want to know why over there there's not very many whole families? This is it. Right? Because you can't tell the difference. So therefore, oh, it was like this. Oh, you've changed. No, you haven't changed. It's just the excitement part's gone down because now you're secure. Now you know the person. Right? So then what does that leave you that means, what does that leave you that can give you a deep taste that's not based on excitement? Of why you should continue the relationship. Someone can answer.
Attachment and affection.
Attachment and affection. And as we mentioned, what's the highest, what will be the strongest connection of that to the sambandha? Because sambandha means your relationship. What we just mentioned. What will be the cause? Yes.
Service.
Service. And service will be based on?
Religious
principles, right? Does that make sense? So a relationship based on religious principles, despite the modern fool's concept that religion gets in the way of the relationship, look at what the fool's percentage of divorce rate is, 75%. Right? And the Vedic, when it's being run nicely, is zero. So who's the idiots? You want, you know, really great relationship, exciting for 6 months, okay for 2 months, going down here seriously for another year, and after 3 years is finished? Or do you want something that lasts a lifetime? Right? Because the choice is all yours. Krishna's not making this choice for you. No one else is the cause of your problem. You are the cause. Bus. Right? Does that make sense? So you base your life on religious principles. That means you're acting according to your nature, you're acknowledging the nature of the other person. Knowing this, you're interacting. That has meaning. So therefore, this is what the other person needs, this is what the other person deals like, this is what the other person will respond to. Right? Then you have a relationship. Otherwise, what will your relationship be based on? Right? They have a cute face. Right? I'll stop at that point. We could keep going, but we'll stop at that point. So what are you going to, you know, is that what you're going to base it on? That's it? They got a cute face? That makes sense? What do they do as they get older and their face is less cute? Right? Then what? Right? Baby donkeys are cute. Have you ever seen one? Anyone seen a baby donkey? Yeah. They're cute? No? Yeah. Donkeys are not cute in any way, shape, or form. But baby donkeys are. Baby anything is cute. Right? So if you're basing it on that, you got problems. Does that make sense? So you have to base it on religious principles. That's the nature, right? So when protection is strong, religious principles are naturally followed, right? So girls, if she's protected, she will always be religious. She's not protected, the tendency is not to be religious, because religion comes from Sambandha, right? Sankarshan is religious principles, right? Prajumna will be religious principles with an interest in following them to enhance a relationship, right? So unless there's protection, there's no relationship. There's no relationship. Why will religious principles be there? Right? Does that make sense? Also, religious principles are the right thing to do. They're situated in the mode of goodness. Therefore, Prayojana is very comfortable because Prayojana represents the mode of goodness. Right? That makes sense? So, in all ways, shapes, and forms, then scientifically, this is required. Right? So, this is why this is pointed out, is because this attachment, unless there's some kind of religious control on it, it will degrade. Because otherwise, how do you know that this attachment is being followed according to its nature? Right? Does that make sense? Because prajumna is an attraction, but that means the intelligence is still using and being, I mean, functioning in prajumna. So intelligence means discrimination. That means doing the right thing. Does that make sense? So unless that element is there of doing the right thing, how do you know that your attachment will actually give you the result, right? Because it's from attachment that abhideya happens, right? Does that make sense? So, okay, is that clear? Mm-hmm. Means these things are very, very important. That's why they're being taught to us. Because if you follow them, it works. You don't follow them, it does not work, right? All you have to do is look around. Who's together? They're following it. Who's not together? They're not following it. It's that simple. Yes?
But if the relationship, I mean, the two principles of excitement
attachment.
No, attachment, right, but these two elements, the attachment, I mean, the excitement and the need.
Uh-huh.
Right? So the excitement will go away at one point. And then the need, which is based on service. Then at the beginning, we have been the physical need, and then upgrades according to the understanding and religious principles and all that. And at one point, the need will kind of upgrade at such a level where arise the principle of, in a broad vision, the only identification with one person vanishes, becomes like the ultimate need is to serve, because that's a common thing among everybody, ultimately serve Krishna.
Yes.
And then the principles of eventual renunciation comes out.
Yes.
And then in a society that is still, you know, after 30 years, we cannot rule these things, you know. Sometimes a person gets inspired to see, okay, I see, not into intelligent analysis of the scriptures following the regulative principles and so forth, and the person feels, okay, this is what I had to do. And then if he has a son that's older enough to leave the wife, you know, in charge with, that's fine. But then, what in the institution, how you, because this is perfect, I know, you know, the kids are understanding at least the principles, But when we analyze the society in a whole, in an overall, they don't have many. They are the ones that have to put it in place. And they say that there are not many examples. You know, the first generation changing wife and all the things, and also taking sannyasi prematurely also. So this is the only route, right? Right now, of creating a society based thoroughly in the Vedic principles.
Mm. Now, because the Shastra gives the example, because it always has the perfect example. So everybody has an example, even if you don't see it around you. It's always more inspiring if you can see it in the Shastra and see it physically. You can, you know, with your senses, you can perceive it. But even if you can't, you can experience it through the Shastra. That's why these points are given through stories. Because, especially in Kali Yuga, the Purana becomes the main scripture, like that. Jiva Goswami establishes that in Tattva Sandarbha, that the Purana is the best, best literary presentation of the philosophy and culture, as opposed to Upanishads, right, or Vedanta, like this. Because it gives you a story of someone who's practically doing it, right? So then you can get that. That's why these are not just stories, right? So the devotees, when they say, oh, these are just stories, or that's a long time ago, but it still applies now, right? Does that make sense? If devotees will do that, then they'll have something. And two, they have to have the faith and all that, that this is what's, you know, what works. But it's right there. The tools for making it perfect, everybody has. It's just a matter of whether they're willing to take it, right? We're just pointing out here is that some will say, okay, so here we got this story of these two brothers that do everything together, eat everything together, do all this thing and whatever it is, and that, you know, but we're not like that, so the story doesn't apply to me. You know, it's that foolish. But the idea is no, this applies to us, because the point is unless you have a relationship that's based on religious principles, then it won't work. Here it was simply spontaneity. There was no rule that they should do everything together. There was no reason. But they were. That was spontaneous. But that same spontaneous attraction, attachment that kept them together, if it's focused on a woman, then can be the cause of their destruction. So that's why then there must be religious principles there. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, the son thinks, I have the full right. The husband thinks, I have the full right. The father thinks he has the full right. But it's only one woman. Right? So how does that work out? Because of religious principles. Everybody has their duties. Everybody has their facilities. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yes? Okay. So section 212. Okay. Narada Muni continued, as soon as those festivities came to an end, the brothers Sunda and Upasunda, desirous of the sovereignty of the three worlds, took counsel and commanded their forces to be arranged. Obtaining the assent of their friends and relatives, of the elders of the Daitya race, and of their ministers of state, and performing the preliminary rites of departure, they set out in the night, when the constellation Magha was in the ascendant. Right? So they're doing all this according to Shastra. Right? These are demons. So that's why it's important to note that not following Shastra is not specifically a demoniac thing. It is demoniac, but it's not that the intelligent... See, these are daityas, not danavas. Right? The daityas are very... Daityas, they all follow Vedic culture, right? Because they're intelligent, they know this is where what works. Danavas may or may not follow it, right? Danavas, it would be like, you know, that big, what do you call it? It means you have them also in human form. You have those ones that, attacked, I think, Ram and Lakshman, you know. His mouth was in the middle of his, you know, stomach, and, you know, big, big, furry, and... All those very strange ones. Those are more your danavas. Like that. They come from danava. The daityas are always very sophisticated. Right? So just pointing out is their success comes from their following of the culture. Right? But their success is simply material. Well, devotees use the same system to be successful devotionally. Right? Does that make sense? The brothers set out with a large daitya force, clad in mail and armed with maces, axes, lances, and clubs. Right? So they had, you know, they went out with various kinds of envelope and, you know, how you say, different, you know, high-end, how you say, stickers, you know, 10 rupee, 20 rupee, you know, like that. No? Is that what it said? No, it didn't. What did it mean?
They went out in armors.
Yeah. Armors. Okay, okay. Oh, or it means they went out in the mail, it means they posted themselves or something, like the penguins or something. Operation Special Delivery. The daitya heroes set out on their expedition with joyous hearts. The charanas chanting auspicious panegyrics? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Panegyrics. Indicative of their future triumphs. Furious in war, the daitya brothers, capable of going everywhere at will, ascended the skies and went to the region of the celestials. The celestials, knowing they were coming and acquainted also with the boons granted unto them by the Supreme Deity, here again, Supreme Deity, left heaven and sought refuge in the region of Brahman. Endued with fierce prowess, the daitya heroes soon subjugated the region of Indra, and vanquishing the diverse tribes of yakshas and rakshasas. Also, every creature ranging the skies, they came away. Those mighty Kar warriors next subjugated the Nagas of the nether region, then the inmates of the ocean, and then all the tribes of the Malechas. Desirous next of subjugating the whole earth, those heroes of irresistible sway, summoning their soldiers, issued these cruel commands. Right? Right, so that means that all the tribes of the Malechas, so that means that the Vedic culture even works over Malechas, despite the Malechas viewpoint on that. But here, Brahmanas, and so they said, Brahmanas and royal sages on earth, with their libations and other food offered at grand sacrifices, increase the energy and strength of the gods, as also their prosperity. Engaged in such acts, they are the enemies of the Asuras. All of us, therefore, mustering together, should completely slaughter them off the face of the earth. Right? But they don't. Here's where they fall short, is because they don't understand that because of the sacrifice done by the Brahmanas and the sages and these, you know, great kings, then the whole universe stays in proper order, because even though the daityas and danavas, they're performing their actions, still that those actions can be performed is because of the offices of the demigods, which are then maintained by sacrifice. You know, so they don't quite understand everything here. Ordering their soldiers thus on the eastern shore of the great ocean, and entertaining such a cruel resolution, the Asura brothers set out in all directions. Those that were performing sacrifices and the Brahmins that were assisting at those sacrifices, the mighty brothers instantly slew. Slaughtering them with violence, they departed for some other place. Whilst the soldiers threw into the water the sacrificial fires that were in the asylums of Munis, with souls under complete control. The curses uttered by the illustrious rishis in wrath, rendered abortive by the boons granted by Brahman, affected not the Asura brothers. When the Brahmanas saw that their curses produced not the slightest effect, like shafts shot at stones, they fled in all directions, forsaking their rites and vows. Even those rishis on earth that were crowned with ascetic success had their passions under complete control and were wholly engrossed in meditation on the deity, from fear of the Asura brothers, fled like snakes at the approach of Vinata's son, Garuda, the snake eater. The sacred asylums were trodden down and broken, the sacrificial jars and vessels being broken, their sacred contents were scattered over the ground. The whole universe became empty, as if its creatures had all been stricken down during the season of general dissolution. O king, after the rishis had all disappeared and made themselves invisible, both the great asuras, resolved upon their destruction, began to assume various forms, assuming the forms of maddened elephants with temples rent from excess of juice. The asura pair, searching out the rishis who had sheltered themselves in cage, sent them to the region of Yama, sometimes becoming as lions and again as tigers, then disappearing the next moment. By these and other methods, the cruel couple, seeing the rishis, slew them instantly. Sacrifice and study ceased, and kings and brahmanas were exterminated. The earth became utterly destitute of sacrifices and festivals. The terrified people uttered cries of "Oh!" and "Alas!" and all buying and selling was stopped. All religious rites ceased, and the earth became destitute of sacred ceremonies and marriages. Agriculture was neglected, and cattle were no longer tended. Towns and asylums became desolate, scattered over with bones and skeletons. The earth assumed a frightful aspect. All the ceremonies in honor of the Pitris were suspended, and the sacred sound of Vashat and the whole circle of auspicious rites ceased. The earth became frightful to behold. The sun and moon, the planets and stars and constellations, and other dwellers in the firmament, witnessing these acts of Sunda and Upasunda, grieved deeply. Subjugating all the points of heaven by means of such cruel acts, the Asura brothers took up their abode in Kurukshetra without a single rival. Section 208. Right? Because if you go by what you want, it has to go in this direction. Right? Because what you want means, if you're not following religious principles, then what you want means at the exclusion of everybody else's need. Does that make sense? So even though it's presented to be very liberal and nice, those who profess not following any kind of social high structure based on scripture, it will turn demoniac. It has to. Otherwise, where will it go? If your feelings are the only reason of its, its following its path. Does that make sense? Section 213. Narad continued. Then the celestial rishis, the siddhas, and the high-souled rishis, possessing the attributes of tranquility and self-restraint, beholding that act of universal slaughter, were afflicted with great grief. With passions, senses, and souls under complete control, they then went to the abode of the grandsire, moved by compassion for the universe. Arrived there, they beheld the grandsire seated with gods, siddhas, and brahmarshis around him. They were present... There were present that god of gods, namely Mahadev and Agni, accompanied by Vayu, Soma, Surya, and Chakra, rishis devoted to the contemplation of Brahman, the Vaikanashas, the Vahlikas, Valakilyas, the Vanaprashtas, the Marichipas, the Ajas, the Vimudas, and other ascetics of great energy. All those rishis were sitting with the grandsire. When the celestial and other rishis, approaching Brahman with sorrowful hearts, represented unto him all the acts of Sunda and Upasunda, they told the grandsire in detail everything that the Asura brothers had done, how they had done it, and in what order. Then all the celestials and the great rishis pressed the matter before the grandsire. The grandsire, hearing everything they said, reflected for a moment and settled in his mind what he should do. Resolving to compass the destruction of the Asura brothers, he summoned Vishvakarma, the celestial architect. Seeing Vishvakarma before him, the grandsire, possessed of supreme ascetic merit, commanded him, saying, "Create thou a damsel capable of captivating all hearts." Bowing down unto the grandsire and receiving his command with reverence, the great artificer of the universe created a celestial maiden with careful attention. That's why sometimes in the poetry it will be saying of that, you know, the beauty of somebody is so special, you know, that the Creator had made this, you know, like that. Because we see here is that they can create like this. Vishwakrit first collected all handsome features upon the body of the damsel he created. Indeed, the celestial maiden that he created was almost a mass of gems. Created with great care by Vishwakarman, the damsel, in beauty, became unrivaled among the women of the three worlds. There was not even a minute part of her body which, by its wealth of beauty, could not attract the gaze of the beholders. And like under the embodied Shri herself, that damsel of extraordinary beauty captivated the eyes and hearts of every creature. It says, like unto, means it still was not as beautiful as Shri. Right? But the point is that Shri is not going to go out and, you know, I say hang around with the boys, right? So they have to create someone else. Because she had been created with portions of every gem taken in minute measures, the grandsire bestowed upon her the name of Tilottama. Right? Til means something very small, like a little drop or a grain, right? Like til seeds, sesame seeds. They're just really taken as small, right? Like there's a South Indian saying that the crowd is so packed, it's so many people, that even if you threw a handful of sesame seeds in the air, they would not hit the ground, right? You know, so their point is something so small can't even get through the people. They're all packed together so much, like that. So Tilottama, you know, the greatest of all, you know, the most, you know, ultimate, how do you say, of all these fine points of beauty put together. As soon as he started it into life, the damsel bowed to Brahman and with joined palms said, Lord of every created thing, what task am I to accomplish and what have I been created for? Right? This is the natural position of the living entity. Is you've been created from somebody, the natural thing is to serve that somebody. Right? Whatever is your origin, you have a connection there and of service. Right? Does that make sense? The grandsire answered, Go, O Tilottama, unto the Asuras, Sunda and Upasunda, O amiable one, tempt them with thy captivating beauty. O damsel, conduct thyself there in such a way that the Asura brothers may, in consequence of the wealth of thy beauty, quarrel with each other as soon as they cast their eyes upon thee. Narad continued, bowing unto the grandsire and saying, So be it. The damsel walked around the celestial conclave. Another, she's going to circumambulate, right? Just like you see Arjuna, whenever he's going to do something, he respects and circumambulates. So then in the same way is that she's taking the blessings of Brahma and all the demigods to do her service. The illustrious Brahman was then sitting with face turned eastwards, Mahadev with face also towards the east, and all the celestials with faces northwards. The rishis with faces towards all directions. While Tilottama walked around the conclave of the celestials, Indra and the illustrious Stanu, Mahadev, were the only ones that succeeded in preserving their tranquility of mind. But exceedingly desirous as Mahadev was of beholding Tilottama, when the damsel in her progress around the celestial conclave was at his side, another face like a full-blown lotus appeared on the southern side of his body. And when she was behind him, another face appeared on the west. And when the damsel was on the northern side of the great god, a fourth face appeared on the northern side of his body. Mahadev, who was eager to behold the damsel, came also to have... No, this is not Mahadev. This should be... Yeah, no, this should say instead of Mahadev, it should say Indra. So Indra, who was eager to behold the damsel came also to have 1,000 eyes, each large and slightly reddish, before, behind, and on his flanks. It was thus that Stanu, the great god, came to have 4 faces, and the slayer of Vala, 1,000 eyes. As regards the mass of the celestials and the rishis, they turned their face towards all directions as Tilottama walked around them, except the divine grandsire himself. The glances of those illustrious personages, all of them, fell upon Tilottama's body. And when Tilottama set out for the city of the Asuras with the wealth of her beauty, all regarded the task as already accomplished. After Tilottama had gone away, the great god, who was the first cause of the universe, dismissed all the celestials and the rishis. Right, so, in other words, as she went around the assembly, everybody just turned as she went and watched her go around. But Indra and Mahadev, they could control themselves, and they didn't. They just sat facing east, like, or whichever direction they were originally. But as she walked around, then Shiva manifested another head to watch, and Indra just manifested eyes all over his body so he could watch. Right? So this is another way that we see Indra gets 1,000 eyes. Right? So this is a little bit more sattvic than our Indra. Yes.
Why would Shiva want to see her?
Because just the perfection of beauty. You know, it's not that it says he controlled his senses, so it wasn't out of lust, it's just out of it's very beautiful. Right? You come and you see a very beautiful landscape, so you like to watch it, you like to see it. But so that would be the difference. The other ones it's more there's, you know, desire, or it may just be just so beautiful. But, you know, they're just not able to maintain the composure that Shiva and Indra could. Like that. And then Brahma just sat there. He had foreheads anyway, so he didn't have to do anything. But he was cool. Is that okay? Yes.
What does it mean to have the soul under control?
Soul under control. Okay, so they mentioned, what did they say? The passions, the senses, and the soul. So passions will be the desires, the senses will be the engagement of the senses, how they're engaged. And then the soul, I would think he would mean that their understanding of their position as Brahman. And so therefore, they always keep themselves properly situated in that pursuit of Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Otherwise, then the soul doesn't have themselves under control, then they don't act as a soul. So they act as a soul, but they don't act as. Okay. Section 214. Narada continued. Meanwhile, the Asura brothers, having subjugated the earth, were without a rival. The fatigue of exertion gone, they, having brought the three worlds under equal sway, regarded themselves as persons that had nothing more to do. Having brought all the treasures of the gods, the Gandharvas, the Yakshas, the Nagas, the Rakshasas, and the kings of the earth, the brothers began to pass their days in great happiness. When they saw they had no rivals in the three worlds, they gave up all exertion and devoted their time to pleasure and merriment, like the celestials. They experienced great happiness by giving themselves up to every kind of enjoyment, such as women, perfumes, floral wreaths, viands, drinks, and many other agreeable objects, all in profusion. In houses, woods, and gardens, on hills and in forests, wherever they liked, they passed their time in pleasure and amusement, like the immortals. It so happened that one day they went for purposes of pleasure to a tableland of the Vindhya range. Tableland? You know tableland?
Yeah.
Flatland. Oh, you mean it's not a shop that sells tables or something? Tableland. Right. You were going to say something? Okay. So it's flatland in the mountains. So generally these flatlands in the mountains, somehow they're very, very... how you say, very scenic, and generally many times very warm, like that, because they somehow or another collect the heat and it stays inside. The other parts of the mountain might be more harsh, but the flatlands will be very pleasant, what's in the mountains. It so happened that one day they went for purposes of pleasure to a tableland of the Vindhya range, perfectly level, stony and overgrown with blossoming trees. After every object of desire, all of the most agreeable kind, had been brought, the brothers sat on an excellent seat, with happy hearts, accompanied by handsome women. Those damsels, desirous of pleasing the brothers, commenced the dance in accompaniment to music, and sweetly chanted many a song in praise of the mighty pair. Meanwhile, Tilotama, attired in a single piece of red silk that exposed all her charms, came along, plucking wild flowers on her way. She advanced slowly to where those mighty asuras were. The asura brothers, intoxicated with the large portions they had imbibed, were smitten upon beholding that maiden of transcendent beauty. Right? Why do they say transcendent? Because we know she's taken of this world.
Not earthly.
Yeah, not earthly. So she transcends the earth. It's because she transcends the material in that she's the best of what's there, but still it's material. Right? But it's above anybody else. Leaving their seats, they went quickly to where the damsel was, both of them being under the influence of lust. Each sought the maiden for himself. Sunda seized that maiden of fair brows by her right hand. Intoxicated with the boons they had attained, with physical might, with the wealth of gems they had gathered from every quarter, and with the wine they had drunk. Maddened with all these, and influenced by wishful desire, they addressed each other, each contracting his brow in anger. "She is my wife, and therefore your superior," said Sunda. "She is my wife, and therefore your sister-in-law." Why does one say superior and one says sister-in-law?
One was elder brother and another
one. Yeah, so the elder brother, then his wife is the superior of the younger brother. And the other one's saying, "She's your sister-in-law." Right? So another one say, "My wife," you know, and then your relation, you know, like that. And they said unto each other, "She is mine, not yours." Soon they were under the influence of rage. Maddened by the beauty of the damsel, they soon forgot their love and affection for each other. Both of them, deprived of reason by passion, then took up their fierce maces, each repeating, "I was the first. I was the first," in taking her hand, and struck each other. The fierce asuras, struck by each other with the mace, fell down upon the ground, their bodies bathed in blood, like two suns dislodged from the firmament. Beholding this, the women that had come there, and the other asuras there present, all fled away, trembling in grief and fear, taking refuge in the nether regions. The grandsire himself, a pure soul, then came there, accompanied by the celestials and the great rishis. The illustrious grandsire applauded Tilotama and expressed his wish of granting her a boon. The supreme deity, before Tilotama spoke, desirous of granting her a boon, cheerfully said, "O beautiful damsel, thou shalt roam in the region of the Adityas. Thy splendor shall be so great that nobody will ever be able to look at thee for any length of time." The grandsire of all creatures, granting this boon unto her, establishing the three worlds in Indra as before, returned to his own realm. Why would this be a nice boon that she has so much splendor that no one can look at her a long time?
No one will get attached.
No one will get attached. Yeah, that would be. That could be. Anything else? Yeah?
She'll feel uncomfortable if everyone's looking at her.
Yeah, she'll feel uncomfortable if everybody's staring at her all the time, right? So therefore, then, her splendor so much they can only look and then they have to look away. So then, like that. So her beauty will be the greatest, but at the same time, as no one will just be standing around. And you know, it's a little annoying. You want to go somewhere and everything stops because you happen to walk down the street. Right? Now, in here, also it showed that Brahma told her that you should attract the attention of these brothers, right? And she said, "So be it." Right? So that means then the feminine nature knows their power, knows their ability, knows how to use it. Does that make sense? So then that means their being attractive then is there in their control. Does that make sense? you know, up to a point, of course. There's going to be those that are incorrigible. And so even though a girl is trying to protect herself, still that protection itself has a particular beauty to it, right? But as far as other things, because what method did she use? Right? Nobody remembers. No one noticed. Yes.
She was picking up flowers. She went.
She was picking flowers.
Well, she went to meet the brothers.
She went to meet the brothers. Okay.
She dressed in a way that
Yes. She dressed in a way that you could tell what she looked like, right? Because one piece of cloth. So that cloth won't be cotton. It will be silk, right? Silk is very, how you say, soft, and so therefore it will move according to the form. Does that make sense? So in other words, if you show the form, right, the detail of the form, that will generate attraction, right? That's the modern system. The girls don't have any good character, so therefore they don't have an inherent feminine beauty, so therefore they use their physical form to create attraction. Does that make sense? And the normal thing is you just use feminine nature. So femininity is attractive, right? So femininity will attract masculinity, right? And sensuality will attract lust. Does that make sense? So that's why, therefore, in the Vedic, this was basically avoided, because good relationship is based on femininity and masculinity, not on sensuality and lust. Does that make sense? So that means the women in the Vedic culture wouldn't use it, and the men in the Vedic culture wouldn't be looking for it. Does that make sense? In other words, it's character that you look for. Character should be the common principle of attraction. Right? Means that they're handsome in features also, that's a plus, that's nice. But it's not that the whole relationship is based on only the features. Does that make sense? Like that. Otherwise, that's all you got. Some handsome features and that's it. But the problem is how do you live with a handsome feature? Oh, you know, what do you say? Oh, yeah, I live with a great face, sir. Yeah, no, yeah. Oh, yeah, who's your wife? Oh, yeah, great pair of eyebrows, you know. You know what I'm saying? Then that's it. What do you got? So you have to be... The whole idea is that it's a person that you're dealing with, that you're living with. So a person means it's qualities. So those qualities should be good. There should be character. Does that make sense? And if this is accepted by everyone, everybody can just relax and concentrate on the character. Right? Does that make sense? And in any case, you don't have to worry. Even if you say, well, everybody's not doing it, how many are not doing it? Right? So only that many boys you'll lose. Right? Does that make sense? So if there's three wild girls in the community, don't worry. You only lose three boys. The rest of them are available. Does that make sense? So there's no loss. You don't have to say, well, unless I do like that, then I won't be able to keep up with the competition. No, that's not competition. That's competition for lust. But if you want somebody with good qualities, it's a different race. You understand? It's not in the same race, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Also mentioned she walked very slowly, right? Why slowly? Right?
So that they can notice her.
Yeah, so they can notice her, right? In other words, you can walk slow and control yourself. That won't be noticed. That's just shy. You're moving through. But walking slowly and showing yourself, then you can show it more slowly than when it's quick. Right? So that's why when ladies go out, they're supposed to go from point A to point B. They just move, and that's it. You know? They just move at a natural pace. They don't go real slow or real... You know what I'm saying? They don't do something to attract attention. Narada continued, "It was thus that asuras, ever united and inspired by the same purpose, slew each other in wrath for the sake of Tilottama. Therefore, from affection, I tell you, ye foremost ones of Bharata's line, that if you desire to do anything agreeable to me, make some such arrangements that you may not quarrel with one another over this for the sake of Draupadi. Vaishampayana continued, the illustrious Pandavas, thus addressed by the great Rishi Narada, consulting with one another, established a rule amongst themselves in the presence of the celestial Rishi, himself endued with immeasurable energy. The rule they made was that, when one of them would be sitting with Draupadi, any of the other four who would see that one thus must retire into the forest for 12 years, passing his days as a brahmacharin. After the virtuous Pandavas had established that rule amongst themselves, the great Muni Narada, gratified with them, went to the place he wished. Thus, O Janamejaya, did the Pandavas, urged by Narada, establish a rule amongst themselves in regard to their common wife. It was for this, O Bharata, that no dispute ever arose between them. We see, of course, as Kshatriyas, they always have to do something extreme, right? So if someone just sees the other person, then he's got to go to the forest for 12 years, right? So like that. They could have just said, if you, you know, come across the other, just leave him alone, right? Like that. But, you know, being Kshatriyas, they always have to do something that's really, you know, but Narada is satisfied because they are Kshatriyas, they have taken it seriously. To say that means they took it very seriously. Because then they saw that this could create disunion and therefore the whole thing would fall apart.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai.